Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 12, Mahini Murti Bewilders Lord Shiva, text number 11. Satam samihitam adak sita janvanasham. Bhute hitam chakajato bhava bandha moksho. Vayur yata vishati kamcha chara charakyam. Sarvam tat atma kataya vagamo varunse. Saha, your lordship, Tvam, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Samihitam, which has been created by you, Adaha, of this material cosmic manifestation, Sthiti Janma Nasham, creation, maintenance, and annihilation. Buddha, of the living entities. Ihitam cha, and the different activities or endeavors. Jagataha, of the whole world. Bhava bandha, moksha, in being implicated and being liberated from material complications. Vayo, the air. Yata, as. Vishati, enters. Kam, in the vast sky. Cha, and. Chara, achara, akyam. And everything moving and non-moving. Sarvam, everything. Tat, that. Atmakataya, because of your presence. Avagamaha, everything is known to you. Avirunse, you're all pervading and therefore know everything. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. My Lord, you are the supreme knowledge personified. You know everything about this creation and its beginning, maintenance, and annihilation. You know all the endeavors made by the living entities by which they are either implicated in this material world or liberated from it. As the air enters the vast sky and also enters the bodies of all living, moving and non-moving entities, you are present everywhere and therefore you are the knower of all. Purport. As stated in the Brahma Samhita, Ekop yaso rachitum jagaranda kotim yats chaktya asti jagaranda chayayarantak Andantarasta paramanu chayantarastam govindamadi purusham tamahang bhajami. I worship the personality of Godhead Govinda, who by one of his plenary portions enters the existence of every universe and every atom, particle, atomic particle, and thus manifests infinite energy unlimitedly throughout the material creation. Ananda chinmaya rasa pratipavitabhis tabirya eva nijarupataya kalabhi golok eva nivisat yakilat makputo govindamadi purushang tamahang bhajami. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, who resides in his own abode, Goloka, with Radha, who resembles his own spiritual figure and who embodies the ecstatic potency Ladini. Their companions are at her confidence, who embody extensions of her bodily form, and who are imbued and permeated with ever-blissful spiritual rasa. Although Govinda is always present in his abode, Goloka Eva Nivasati, he is simultaneously present everywhere. Nothing is unknown to him, and nothing can be hidden from him. The example given here compares the Lord to the air, which is within the vast sky, with every body, but still is different from everything. As we heard before, Eka Desha Sitasya Gya Yutosna Vistrasimnyata Parasha Brahmata Shaktis Tatedam Akilam Jagat. Just like fire is in one place, but it diffuses its heat and light everywhere. So similarly, the Supreme Lord is one person, and he's diffusing his different energies everywhere. So, Krishna is in Goloka Vrindavan in his original form as Krishna with his different relationships with his associates there. But still, he's able to expand himself personally as well as his energies everywhere in all the material and spiritual universes. But we shouldn't think that Krishna has become some different person, or that the energies are actually different from Krishna. What's the first? Just ita, joshchivasim ita. Oh, that's right. Ekadesha, sita, yeah. So, still, ekadesha, he's in one place, but his energies and himself able to go everywhere. But we should understand everything from the point of view of Krishna as a cowherd boy in Vrindavan. It's not that when he expands himself as Nrisimhadev, he's no longer a cowherd boy in Vrindavan, or he's a different person. Yeyatamam prapadyante tamstataiva bhajamyaham mama vartmanu vartante mrinushaparta sarvashaha. As they surrender to me, then I reward them accordingly. Everyone follows my path in all respects, O son of Kunti. So Krishna is simply reciprocating according to the desires of living entities, how they want to reciprocate with Krishna. Now Krishna prefers to stay in Goloka Vrindavan, which he never... Vrindavan specifically, he never takes a foot away from there in his original form. But because there's varieties of desires by the living entities, Krishna reciprocates with those desires. Because Krishna could have just remained himself, theoretically, because he's eternally existing along with his associates. But just take it theoretically, he could have stayed all by himself. But then when he expanded himself as Radharani, what is he going to do? Now if you try to control Radharani as if she was a slave, it wouldn't have been very interesting. No, actually what's interesting is that, for instance, in the material world, the relationship between the master and the slaves is not really so interesting. Although people may take an interest in it, it's the most obvious form of exploitation, and there's no question of love. But generally speaking, people are looking for affection and love, although sometimes they express it by exploiting others. When they can't get, no one will love them and they don't love anyone, then when it's only exploitation, they get a pet dog, and hopefully the pet dog shows some appreciation. But when Krishna expands himself as Radharani, it's purely to enjoy loving relationships, because that's where the most pleasure lies, is in loving relationships. Therefore, even in the material world, if you take a look at the magazines on the bookshelf, on the magazine racks, they're all about romance. Because in the material world, the hope for love is found in romance. Of course, people sometimes even think they're having a romantic relationship with their dog. If you can't find it in a human being, then you look for it in the animals or in the fish. Every time my goldfish turns and looks at me, I can see it has eyes of love. But, obviously, the material world is the place of imagination to begin with. So to imagine that your goldfish loves you is not any different from imagining that your dog loves you. As a matter of fact, if you stop feeding your dog, most of the time it'll stop loving you also. So love in the material world means business. You got to pay the price for the so-called love. But love in the spiritual world, there's no price to pay because there's nothing, no one needs anything in the spiritual world except for love, for service. That they exist and they thrive by love and service. And therefore, everything goes on there spontaneously due to love and service. And here everyone feels they need something, although they don't really need anything, but what they really need is to get out of this place where they think they need something. Because this desire, this necessity that we need something, although having a material body, the material body needs things, just like if you have a car, then obviously the car needs things. You can't say, my dear car, you're not a car. You don't, so if I don't give you gas, if I don't give you oil, I don't maintain you. What's the difference? You're not that car. But they are the car. The car is a car, and it needs things to work. Because that's the way the material world works. It needs things to work. Therefore, in order to maintain this body, it needs things. What it needs is different from different living entities. And indeed, the most advanced soul won't hardly need anything like the six Goswamis. I mean, they're not concerned so much with maintaining their body. But others may need different things, different amounts of things at different times, etc. So that takes some intelligence, but it's supposed to be like salt to taste. If you have salt, if you take a little bit of salt and put it on the vegetable, then it tastes very nice. If you put too much salt on it, you can't eat it. If you don't put any salt on it, you can't, sometimes it's tasteless. So we salt to taste. So the amount that we need in order to maintain this body, in order to execute devotional service. So that knowledge comes from Krishna. In other words, Krishna is in our heart, and if we ask him a question, he's very likely, if we ask it in the right mood for the right reason, to reciprocate with us and tell us what the answer is, or at least give us some indication where we might be able to find the answer if we're actually looking for it. Now that's due to Krishna's all-pervading nature, as it says here. How someone can be all-pervading, it's a little difficult for us to imagine. I mean, we may be all-pervading within this body, and therefore, by some cultivation of knowledge, we may become aware of what's going on in our body. Right now, because we don't know that much, we're not that much conscious, even in the material world, the soul has been covered, as Krishna says, dumena riyate vanir, yatar darsho malena cha, yatobana avrita garvas, yatate nadam avritam. Just like fire is covered by smoke, the mirror is covered by dust, or the embryo is covered by the womb, so the living entity is covered by different degrees of lust. So our ability to be conscious has been limited by the particular modes of nature we've acquired. And therefore, in the human form of life, there's an opportunity to purify one's consciousness, to purify the mind specifically, so the consciousness can become more conscious. We can become more conscious of things as they actually are. While in the animal species and the other species of life, that opportunity is not there, and therefore they may partially be conscious of their bodies. Imagine being a whale or Tim and Golfit, a whale. That little tiny spark, 1/10,000th the size of Tip Aaron's size, I don't know how much he's aware of the whale body. But it means that consciousness can expand, but that quality of consciousness is not very great. The whale is not interested in self-realization, to find out who I am. Why am I in this whale's body? Although it might be aware of the different aspects of the whale. What's going on? What kind of fish he just swallowed, perhaps, etc., etc. Now Krishna explains he has unlimited consciousness, which is unimpeded by any mode of nature, just like the sun is above the clouds. The clouds may impede our vision from the sun, but the clouds don't impede the sun's vision. The sun shines brightly in spite of how many clouds there may be in the sky. It doesn't affect the sun at all. As a matter of fact, the clouds are manufactured by the sun's rays. Similarly, Krishna's consciousness is all-pervading, therefore he knows everything. But that doesn't mean he's not Krishna, or he changes. That when his consciousness is aware of what's going on in the material world, it's not that he gets frustrated and he stops being Krishna here. No, he's still a coward boy in Vrindavan. But he reciprocates with living entities here, just like he does in Goloka Vrindavan, according to their desire to reciprocate with him. So everything is actually a reciprocation with Krishna. Here, it's a little perverted, or a lot perverted, according to the mode of nature. But anyhow, at every moment, eternally, we have a relation with Krishna that can never be lost, because we can't exist without a relation with Krishna, because Krishna is everywhere. And he's controlling everything. The only thing he doesn't control is the individual's desires. There we're free to go anywhere we want, either to heaven, to hell, to Vaikuntha, to Brahman, or to Goloka Vrindavan. Depends on our desire. Of course, we have to know what to desire. Since we don't know so much about Goloka Vrindavan or Vaikuntha, we may not feel a great urge to go there. If some spaceship came down, some people came out of it and said, here's a one-way ticket to Goloka, we'd like to go. We might hesitate. Are you really going to Goloka? Could I see your pilot's license? Tell me something about Krishna. Do you know anything about Krishna? No, they just told me to pick you up. We want to know something. We'd hesitate because we're not so sure. Where in the scriptures it says that little green people coming down in spaceships and take you to Goloka Vrindavan? So we're not we're not overwhelmed with the desire to go Goloka. We don't wake up in the morning, when am I going to go to Goloka? Where's Goloka? Goloka. No, we wake up and say, where am I? What's this place? How did I get here? Let me out. Oh, I gotta go to Mangalarati, not another one. Pull it closer, closer. This is Goloka for me. Nice and warm and dark. But that's possible to cultivate Krishna consciousness because Krishna knows our limitations. It's not that he's thinking, well, why don't you become a pure devotee? You've been in this movement for 20 years or whatever it is, and you're still not a pure devotee. I give up. Get out of here. Go back to your mother. Don't bother me. Now Krishna understands, and he gives an opportunity even for the practicing devotee to get some experience of what pure devotional service is, what the mood of the residents of Vrindavan are, if we want to. Therefore, everything is just what we're doing is simply to develop a desire to want to, at least, become Krishna conscious. On some level or another, especially we're being offered Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mood of saving the conditioned souls. So, and what we're saving them to enter into the mood of loving reciprocations that are found in Goloka Vrindavan, or in Vaikuntha, or in this material world in pure devotional service. So by practicing this Krishna consciousness seriously, then we might become aware of, actually, I do have a relation with Krishna now. It's not I'm going to get a relation with Krishna. I have an eternal relation with Krishna at every moment. Everyone does. Not only me. I'm not the only pure devotee in the universe. I wasn't God's gift to the Hare Krishna movement. There was a big vacuum in the Hare Krishna movement, and then I advented myself, and everything became perfect. No, everyone has a relation with Krishna, and Krishna reciprocates with every living entity, eternally. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sadhya Kavanoi Shravanadi Kshuta Chite Karya Udoy. That everyone is actually a Nitya Siddha in the sense that everyone is eternally a soul, perfect, complete within themselves. Krishna Prema. And by nature, everyone has Krishna Prema dormant within them. Sada Kavanoi, Shravanadi, and by the process of hearing and chanting and serving, etc., when that dormant love of Krishna can be awakened. And anyone, it's a gift in one sense, it's already there, it's just the gift is the knowledge by which we can awaken our normal Krishna consciousness. Therefore it says, Brahmande Brahmate Kon Bhagavanti, Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhakti Lata Beach. The Guru's business is simply to give the instructions by following which our natural love for Krishna will be invoked. Just like Prabhupada gives the example, walking is natural for a child. It simply needs some practice. And after some practice, its natural tendency to walk will be there. And what we'll discover is that Krishna is everywhere. Krishna is all cognizant, but it's not that Krishna is all cognizant. He's like, you know, the force. Or he's love. Or something impersonal. No, Krishna is personally present anywhere we want him. Even he may be impersonally present if that's the way we want him. But if we want him as Krishna, then he'll be Krishna everywhere. Then when we see Nrisimhadeva, we'll see him as an expansion of Krishna. And we'll understand that the mood of Nrisimhadeva is not when he gets frustrated, he had a fight with Radharani, he came to the material world and ripped apart a few demons just to take out his frustration. No, he's always a loving servant of his devotees, but he has to reciprocate with them according to their mood in order to encourage him to make, ultimately adhere to make progress towards spiritual life, towards reviving their relation with Krishna. If they say, where is your God, Prahlad? Then God will appear and rip the person apart. So that the person realizes Prahlad was right. He's God. Otherwise, if Lord Nrisimhadeva came with a rose and offered it to Hiranyakashipu, oh, you're so sweet. Hiranyakashipu wouldn't have been very much impressed by Nrisimhadeva, nor would he have learned the lesson that there is a God and it's not him. And that's the most essential lesson, not only Nrisimhadeva, that Hiranyakashipu has to learn, it's the same lesson we all have to learn, that there's a God and it's not us. Therefore, Krishna taught Hiranyakashipu in a unique way by ripping him apart. And he'll teach us in some way or another also. Then we kindly get the message that there is a God and it's not us. And he's everywhere. And right now we're practically nowhere. But we can go somewhere if we become Krishna conscious. So I'll stop there. Any questions or comments?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. I'm reading about the devotees who are distributing 1,000 books per day. And I'm thinking, how is this possible?
Well, keep on dreaming about it, and one day it may be revealed. What kind of books do they distribute?
Big books, usually.
Big books. Well, first of all, you have to practice lifting weights, carrying around 1,000 big books. I don't know. I do know when they were distributing 1,000 big books, they weren't doing them one at a time, obviously. And they weren't doing it to poor people. Here's a stack of books, you know. Give a donation. I only have 50 cents. That's no worries. Give from your heart. No, they were distributing to quite wealthy people, generally speaking. If we try to imitate time, place, and, you know, what was going on in a different time, a different place, different circumstances, then we just get frustrated. Well, he's saying, you only took one book, you're a rascal, you know. What about my prestige? I'm out here, I'm working hard for my prestige and to show how powerful I am, and you only took one book? You're an insult to me. You're insulting me. No, we have to work according to our time, place, and circumstance. And not think ourselves that we're all powerful. What, if he did 1,000, I should do 2,000. Well, we humbly try to go out and distribute as many as possible and keep people in a favorable mood also as much as possible and not expect that we're the controller. If Krishna puts this, if in the future birth Krishna puts in a situation where we have, you know, 1,000 books a day paid for, we're distributing to the wealthiest people in the world and they're all out in the street looking for spiritual life, then maybe the atmosphere, if the atmosphere is conducive, then we might be able to do something like that. But then, that's not the end of the game. You distribute 1,000 books one day, 1,000 books the other day. But unless you keep your Krishna consciousness, one day you'll decide, I don't want to go out anymore. So it's also our mood that we have to be in. We have to do it, not dream of the mood that we're simply out there due to causeless love for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his servants. We're out there as a selfless servant, trying to do it, whatever we can to spread this movement, simply to please Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It's good to dream about that too. Yes, Madhuri. Yeah, okay.
Thank you, Maharaj, for the class. Sort of a follow-up, actually, to Mukund Madhava's question. So should we be focusing on book scores, or should we focus on our own consciousness as we do our book distribution?
Why not both? Sorry. Take this book or else I'm going to beat you up. I'm only focusing on the number of books I'm distributing.
Take this book or else.
Yeah. Take the book. You got your mask on.
Ski mask, not just the mask.
Give a donation, a big donation.
Empty your pockets, or else.
No, we want to distribute as many. If you're ecstatically in love with Krishna, you're feeling great compassion, you know, flowing from your meditation of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his mission, you don't think people will be attracted? If you have a product, if you're going out there, you have a bar of gold, 1 kilo of gold, and you're passing them out to people. Do you think people will stop and take the bar of gold?
They'll be swarming.
What's that?
They'll be swarming.
Yeah, so we are actually emitting pure pleasure out of love of God, out of service to Krishna. You don't think some people are going to come by and, you know, find out where it's coming from?
Mm. That's a nice meditation. Thank you.
We have some questions from on the internet. Okay. So, Krishna is all attractive. This begs the question, how is he attractive to the demons who want to kill him?
How is he attractive to the demon? Well,
yeah.
I don't know. You have to ask the individual demon. There's a whole variety of demons. They may find different things attractive about Krishna. First of all, if he Krishna is the strongest. So some demons are interested in fighting. They're impressed by someone's strength. So that way they're appreciating his strength. Krishna knows how to do all the martial arts. So they're impressed by his knowledge. The demons watch Krishna fight. They're impressed. Well, he's pretty good. May not be one of us, but he knows what he's doing. So there may be different reasons why people, including the demons, why they're impressed by him. But he's definitely impressive. Imagine when he shows the demons universal form. It's quite impressive. Of course, Duryodhana wasn't so impressed. So not everyone is impressed by Krishna directly, because they're envious of Krishna, the demons generally. But they're impressed by Krishna's manifestations. Just like Duryodhana was impressed by, actually that was Shishupal. Who did Duryodhana, he was impressed by getting the kingdom, getting the opulence. He was impressed by his head demons who sent him to this earth to do his mission. But these head demons are also manifestations of Krishna. So he may be, due to enviousness, he may not recognize Krishna. Krishna may cover himself. But in another form, Krishna is manifested to this, someone like Duryodhana, in the form of whoever he's taking his orders from, the higher demons in the universe, who are actually manifestations of Krishna's energy too. Anything else? Yes.
Not here, but I have a question. You said, if you're giving out gold, I'm wondering how can we gain that gold? How do we emit this Krishna consciousness?
The formula is we see everything belongs to Krishna, and we find out what Krishna wants us to do with his energy. We do it to please him, then we remember Krishna will appear within our memory, within our minds, and we'll be ecstatic as much as we're receptive to Krishna's mercy. And that ecstasy will not just be contained within ourselves. Krishna is actually present there, so that power of Krishna's presence will be felt by others too, proportioned to our ability to, how much Krishna reveals himself to us. He's automatically revealing himself to others also, according to their receptivity. It's like if you have a fire, then the fire is not only felt by you, but anyone who's near the fire also feels it. Okay. Kala, Grantharaj, Srimad Bhagavatam, Ki Jai.